KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, the hidden world of girls. The award-winning radio producers known as the Kitchen Sisters are here. Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva will be sharing stories about their latest NPR series, this one examining the lives of girls and their tales of courage, creativity, and coming of age. Like their earlier projects, Hidden Kitchens and Lost and Found Sound, the hidden world of girls sprang from suggestions gleaned from public radio listeners. We'll hear excerpts and the backstory on how these pieces get put together. You're invited to join us on Forum and tell us your stories. We'll get started right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, most listeners of public radio are familiar with the extraordinary work of the Kitchen Sisters. For the past 25 years, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson have created some of the most memorable moments in public radio. Their series, Hidden Kitchens, explored food rituals, traditions, and oddities from all over the world. And their series, Lost and Found Sound, was honored with a prestigious Peabody Award. We're going to hear from them in just a minute, but first, here's an excerpt from their latest series, The Hidden World of Girls.
I'm Sophia Fish. I'm 13 years old, and I live in Manhattan in New York City. My friends and I, we did this ritual thing, like every month or so. The five of us girls, we would sleep over at one of our houses. We would turn off all the lights, like four candles, and we have this ritual box. You know Urban Outfitters? Okay, so they have these jewelry boxes with like sequins on the top. The box is just one of those jewelry boxes. There are also little sheets of paper, five sheets for each girl. We would write our like deepest secret or something like that, and we would put them inside the box. And we're not allowed to look at it for like years and years. We would stay up all night, just talk it out. Any problems or issues that we were having with our families, other people, each other. It was just to get, I don't know, this can sound cheesy, but like our emotions out.
And that excerpt from The Hidden World of Girls, produced by the Kitchen Sisters, and they are now with us here in the studio, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson. Welcome to Forum.
Thanks, Scott.
One of the wonderful things, and we heard it just there in that little clip, is the authenticity of the voices that we hear in the work that you do. And Nikki, talk a little bit about how you find these people.
You know, in our everyday life, you just say things out loud and tell people what you're working on, and you'd be amazed at the stories that kind of come out of the woodwork. And when you talk about something like girls or food or pioneering women or sounds or soundtracks that have made an impact in your life, you know, they resonate with people, and people do have their own sort of hidden world within them that they are willing to share if you ask.
And what kind of response do you get to us? I know that there's a phone number people can call, and you've done that with series in the past as well. What kind of response do you get?
It's always surprising, and it's just, for us, incredibly fun to, it's like opening packages at a birthday party every morning when you see what's come in, and all these unexpected takes. I mean, when we were doing Hidden Kitchens, and someone called in about the George Foreman Grill as being their, the ultimate hidden kitchen because it's used by the homeless and by people who can't afford to live in an apartment with a kitchen. And it was something we never would have imagined thinking about it ourselves. And I think having these calls coming in from people, it's finding out what people are thinking about. It's not trying to project out there what is happening.
And Davia, it's what's so charming about some of these things is that oftentimes things in our own lives as well, we take for granted, you know, or we don't think they're anything special. And yet when you sit down with someone like Sophia and you hear her story about her, the secret box, it just has an extraordinariness to it that you don't necessarily see when you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and the beauty of Sophia's story, you know, we say sometimes we find the stories, sometimes the stories find us. And we were collecting for the Hidden Kitchen series, and I was in New York, and we were going to chronicle this tomato lady, a woman with a little farm stand by the side of the road who made these just beautiful, grew these beautiful tomatoes. And I was walking with Sophia, who's the daughter of a friend of ours, and she just began to tell the story of her ritual box and this ritual. And that was one of the inspirations for the series. And, we just often also say that our microphone is a stethoscope, sort of listening to the complicated heart of the nation. If you just stop and chronicle it or capture it, it is this little jewel right there before you.
And when you, as Nikki said, you listen to these messages every morning that you get from public radio listeners mostly, what are you looking for? What are you listening for?
Yeah, I was thinking as she was talking, 2,789 minutes of messages came in for the Hidden Kitchen series, filled up 36 CDs, and it was just like having the greatest hits of the nation, everyone riffing off of their Hidden Kitchen. You know, you're listening for that surprise. You're listening for something that it's like lifting a rock and seeing this whole little world underneath it, something or something that you've looked at all the time, like the Cab Yard Kitchen here in San Francisco, outside Yellow Cab, a little Brazilian mobile rolling night kitchen. There you are seeing fleets of cabs go by every day. But if you stop and think, where do they eat? Where are they getting their food at midnight? What lonely street are people down? Same with the Girl series. If you just find that little unexpected thing when an Urban Outfitters jewelry box suddenly becomes the basis of an entire ritual and the way these girls get their emotions out.
And, you know, audio and even just hearing the whole idea of an answering, and is it really a machine? I mean, is it literally a machine or is it something more digital?
I think it's a little more digital. It's
digital and ethereal.
Ethereal. But it is, I mean, the whole concept of what you do, I think, is sort of old-fashioned in a way. You know, it's not, I mean, it is high-tech because the work you do is extraordinarily complex. It may not, but the notion of just a voice talking and telling their story is, it's very simple. And I think that's part of the appeal for listeners. What are your thoughts, Davia?
Absolutely. You hear the regions of America. You hear the countries of the world. You hear all the ways people, the rhythms of speech, how people tell a story. It is that most basic, you know, storytelling is as basic as food and these little four-minute messages that people send in, that they call in. It's sort of, it's interesting, the Hidden World of Girls line has a very confessional quality. We weren't anticipating that. The Hidden Kitchens was real declarations and emergency. You've got to get to that field in New York because these tomatoes, that's going to get developed and these tomatoes will be gone. These women's messages have a whole other quality. And it's not just women. It's men calling in, boys, girls, brothers, uncles. You know, there's a much more pensive quality to them, much more personal quality.
And some of the women that you're going to be profiling and we'll be hearing about in the coming weeks come from places where women and girls don't have a lot of rights. There is a lot of oppression. And, you know, Nikki, how do you deal with a situation like that? Or do you feel protective, for example, of the people that you're profiling?
It's complicated, I think that's one of the reasons why doing this right now was of interest to us, is that it's such a conflicting time in terms of women, and so much is going on in terms of women's rights and women leaders, and so much opportunity on the one hand, and then on the other hand, women all over the world are unable to get education, and sex trafficking, and very serious dark issues that are, you know, running rampant. And I think trying to open up this conversation and really think about what's going on with women and what the next steps are is part of why we were doing this. And I think we do feel protective. And also, it's challenging to figure out how to tell those stories in new ways that don't completely turn people off. We've heard so many horror stories. How do you find the hope? How do you find the vision and the model in those stories?
Davia, can you think of some of the women that you'll be, and girls that you'll be profiling, that where there was that concern, you know, that you were going into a place where perhaps what they were doing was, you know, radical or really crossing a line?
Well, right before we came here today, we were sent images of a painter in India. She's in her 90s now, and she has lived in the same neighborhood in Pune for years and years. And she has been painting. She's a painter of women, as she was introduced to it, us. And she paints prostitutes. And she has for years and years and years painted the prostitutes of her neighborhood. And with the money from selling her paintings, she gives it to NGOs that help these women try and find another life besides prostitution, find a way to support themselves. So we love the story. The series is multimedia. You'll be hearing these stories as well as seeing them. There'll be slideshows of her paintings, we hope. But you just, it's a hornet's nest. I mean, right there, the anonymity, the protection, people's names, how much does Shakuntala want? You know, just, it's a little
nest. You have to negotiate all that.
Yes. And also, when we began the Kitchen Sisters over 20, like 25 or so years ago, everything was public domain. Everything was available. You could walk into the Library of Congress, the National Archives, the Smithsonian, and just plug your tape recorder into their tape recorder and come away with 10 pounds of sound. You know, it was just all there for the taking.
Now, you can't do that now?
No. Perhaps your listeners know that. Everything, everyone is so much more, and sometimes rightfully so, protective, but also sometimes not rightfully so. Everything is so buttoned down and private property at this point. It's harder to tell history under those kind of conditions. And
Are there places coming back to this notion of, you know, protecting and feeling protective of the women and the girls you're talking to? You know, what are some, you mentioned India, and I'm thinking of places like Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia, you know, some places where women really, they can't vote, they can't go to school in some cases. I mean, are you hearing from places like that? Nikki?
We were just at the Women in the World conference in New York City that Tina Brown put together with the Daily Beast, and we interviewed a number of women there who were guests and who spoke. And it was such a moving conference. I'd urge people to go to look at some of the things online. And so many of those stories were about women who are every day, challenged in the work they do, receiving threats. And you know, you have to wonder how to tell these stories in a way that isn't going to further threaten them, further, make it more extreme. And yet, this is the conversation people need to be having. We need to know about these women. We need to know about the work that needs to be done. And I think the challenge is how to do it in the most sensitive and storytelling way.
Yeah.
And radio is such a great way to do that because people can go by first name and it's voice only. And
there's a little more anonymity.
There's a little more protection.
Yeah.
There are these women in the Congo who have a media project, and they are going around and interviewing. There's just been so much, you know, rape and war and problems, and women are afraid to come out and speak publicly about what's happened. But this media group is interviewing these women and then buying time on radio stations, and especially in these rural villages, and airing these women's stories, these first-person stories, and kind of getting the word out that way. And it's those kinds of projects, I think, that we need to be hearing about.
Well, let's play another excerpt from the series, The Hidden World of Girls. And I think let's listen to the one from Estonia. And I don't know if you want to set it up, Davia. I believe her name is it Tina Urum? Am I pronouncing
Tina
that correctly?
Tina Urum. She's 26, from Estonia. And she's a bit of a pioneer.
Okay, let's listen.
We call it the garbage map of Estonia. We were mapping on Google Earth with GPS the illegal garbage sites. The situation is bad. I'm Tina Urm. I'm 26. I was the communications manager of the Let's Do It campaign in Estonia. 50,000 people volunteering, all the nation together in one day, cleaning all the country from the illegal garbage sites. A really crazy idea, but it spread from friend to friend. There were kids, there were students, grandmothers, grandfathers. In the Soviet time, when Estonia was occupied, people felt that this is not their country, it has been taken away from them. So they leave their garbage, their waste behind. Although we regained the independence, to really acknowledge that this is our land, we have to take care of it, nobody else. We have to start to love this land again. Let's do something about it, you know? Well, let's do it in one day. I don't want to wait so long.
Again, that clip from the Kitchen Sisters' new series, The Hidden World of Girls, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, with us this hour on Forum. And let's open up the phone lines a little early, because I imagine we have some listeners who may have some stories of their own that they want to share with us this morning. 866-733-6786 is the number, 866-733-6786. And as always, you can email us as well. It's forum@kqed.org. Davia, I want to ask you about the music. We just heard some terrific music there in that clip from Estonia. How do you go about finding the music?
Oh, the music. That's one of our favorite parts of the whole project. There's so many ways we find the music. I mean, we've been collecting music for years and years. The archive that is coming to this project began even before the Lost and Found Sound Project in 1999. Chris Strachwitz over at our Hooli Records Down Home Music in Berkeley has always opened up his huge treasure trove to us, music around the world. That Estonian music came from record producer and archivist Joe Boyd. He had that Estonian music in his collection. He opens that to us, and we are able to turn to him for almost any country in the world that we don't have. Listeners are endlessly. We always ask, whoever we interview in the world, we, Tina Urm included, we always say, what is your soundtrack? What is the music that belongs in your story? And we always ask everyone we interview to sing. So in almost any Kitchen Sister interview, you will hear someone sing or try to get out of singing.
Yeah, I can't sing that.
That's right. And then we also collect lullabies. Since we began working together in the late 70s, almost every single person we've interviewed, we've asked them to sing us a lullaby. So we have both. So, you know, what people tell us, and then often people will send us the music after we've interviewed them. They'll send us the things that they think belong.
Is it a lot easier now, Nikki, to find music that is, for lack of a better word, obscure, just less well-known, given, you know, the internet you can hear music from all over the world just with a click of a mouse now?
You can, but I think it takes that person that really knows about the music, and that's what we've been so fortunate to. Over the years, we've developed these great relationships with people, and I think, too, right by Davia's house is Amoeba Records, and I can't count the number of times she's run down there, you know, we'll be on the telephone and needing some music. And there's just a group of experts down there to, you know, pick their brains and what's the best thing for, you know, whatever we're working on. Also, public radio stations. I live in Santa Cruz and KUSP. A lot of the people there are music experts, and we go to them and say, help. And they've come forward. And I think because we don't narrate our pieces in a traditional way, the music really does provide a lot of the driving force and the narrative.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because you aren't in any of your pieces. Well, maybe I shouldn't say any, but I don't think you are. How did that decision get made, Davia, to not include your own voices in these stories?
I don't think we ever have decided that. Just as more happened over the years, the very first piece we had on NPR, you actually hear us in the story asking questions. Bit by bit, we just, I think maybe because there's two of us and it's a little more awkward to hand off narration. Also, we did this, the third story we ever did for public radio is The Legend of Ernest Morgan, the world's champion one-handed pool player. And we recorded, he was a Southern storyteller, did fancy exhibition pool shooting, and he was playing at this real dive bar in Santa Cruz where we both were living, and we went and recorded his sort of one-man show. And we had our voices in there, we had ourselves asking questions, and bit by bit, as we pulled ourselves out of the story, we realized it was such a stronger story with just Ernest Morgan and the sound of the pool balls and the bar crowd and the jukebox, and it just kind of went from there.
How did you meet? You said you were both living in Santa Cruz. I assume you met down there?
We did. We both went to the University of California at Santa Cruz, but we didn't know each other at that point.
And what did you study?
Aesthetic studies.
Aesthetic
studies. I don't
studies.
Believe that exists anymore on the planet Earth. But
Davia, what about you? What did you study?
Politics. I wanted to be the first woman Supreme Court justice or a disc jockey.
Either one.
Yeah, I was sort of vying for both in college.
Uh-huh. So you met, and how did the Kitchen Sisters, what happened?
Well, Davia was doing a show at KUSP and was very interested.
Spinning records
and very interested in oral history and really getting out and talking to people. And I was working at the museum in town, the Natural History Museum, and I was doing an art and history program. And, you know, we just started, hearing about each other. Davia would go out somewhere and I would have been there a few days before, you know, gathering somebody's old stuff, and she was talking to them. And pretty soon, just it happened too many times, and we finally met, and, you know, lightning struck, and we became great friends and collaborators.
And kitchen sisters, where did that come from? You must have been asked this 1,000 times.
Nikki, at the time, bought a commune. A group of people bought some land, and they had all moved in, and we were cooking one of the first meals, and there was just this disastrous kitchen on this old rundown house that was on the property at the time, and we were cooking a salmon dinner and getting prepared for our Tuesday. We used to do a live show every Tuesday for 2.5 hours, and we would interview local authors and artists and filmmakers, and Les Blank was one of the first people we ever interviewed. And we were reading a book about the history of Santa Cruz architecture. And in the book was a chapter about the Kitchen Brothers, who were two local stonemasons, Kenneth and Robert Kitchen. And they built, by the light of the moon, yogi temples, goat milk bars. They would quarry up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, bring the rocks down in a convertible Packard. And we just got obsessed with the Kitchen Brothers as we were wrecking the salmon dinner. And we just started laughing, calling ourselves the Kitchen Sisters. And it was that time also of the Soledad Brothers and, you know, Free the Soledad Brother. And someone made a bumper sticker that said, Free the Kitchen Sisters. And we introduced ourselves that way on the radio that Tuesday, and it just stuck.
Yeah. Well, I want to open up the phone lines and help me. What do we want from listeners? What you'd like, some stories, I imagine. What kinds of things would you want to hear from our listeners? These are stories of girls and women who blazed trails. They were pioneers. There's talk of rituals and secrets. Coming of age, what would you like to hear from folks listening this morning?
Yeah, well, we say groundbreaking girls and trailblazing women, and definitely coming of age rituals and rites. You know, and women, we say unsung heroes and the famous, you know, completely the known and the unknown, girls and women, people who shaped you, people who inspired you, people who have a story to be told. It doesn't have to be a big splashy story. It can be something very local and neighborhood. I was thinking this morning about kind of one of the things that led to this series is a group in this town called Girl Source, and they teach young women in the Mission neighborhood media skills, and they have an annual event where they honor elder women in the community who've made contributions across their lifetime. And one of the women that they, and it's a big event, often takes place at one of the downtown hotels, and you know, they're seeing these teenage girls out of the Mission bringing these awards to these women in the community who've broken some kind of ground. And one of the women, when she was doing her thank you to one of the elders, said, I just always had a motto, if you go to the meeting, make sure you get in the minutes. And it just is sort of like, okay, who are the women that get in the minutes?
Yeah. Well, we'd love to hear from you this morning. Tell us about your rituals, your rites of passage, some family traditions, women who influenced you while you were growing up or after you grew up. 866-733-6786, the number to call here to talk with the Kitchen Sisters. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and just click on this segment. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning, and our guests are the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, talking with us about their new NPR series, The Hidden World of Girls. And if you'd like to tell us your stories, give us a call, 866-733-6786. Let's play another excerpt from the series. And this is from the narrator is a woman named Pat Cadigan. And anything you want to tell us about her before we hear it? Nikki, Davia?
Well, we sent out, along with asking the nation to call in, we've also asked people online to send us in stories. And this story came to us from sending out the word saying we wanted to know about the secret life of girls around the world. And we always say girls and the women they become. And this came back.
My best friend Rosemary and I had a very involved secret life when we were in elementary school. After we saw The Day the Earth Stood Still on TV, we invented a whole secret life in which we were twins from the planet Venus. We were in charge of the entire solar system, as well as Earth. And this mostly involved our having secret, exclusive contact with the Beatles, who came to us for advice about their songs and how to deal with fame and other important matters. On occasion, they would ask us to use our highly developed shape-shifting ability to become them and finish recording sessions and concert tours when they were too tired to go on themselves. Every detail of our exciting lives was being broadcast to our home planet Venus as well, providing many hours of entertainment for all the other Venusians. Of course, we had many other superpowers, which allowed us to help out Superman, Flash, Wonder Woman, and a few other superheroes. Now, this complex double life lasted from 1963 to a time when we should have outgrown it, except we were having too much fun. Eventually, our lives diverged. Rose stayed in the town where we grew up, married, and had two daughters. I went off to university and eventually became a science fiction writer. We reunited in the early 80s when we were both having marital problems. I tried to keep in touch, although contact became sporadic again. We'd been out of touch for a few years when I found out that Rose had died of bone cancer 2 weeks before 9/11, only a few days before she would have turned 50. She's on Venus now. I'm sure of it.
Pat Cadigan talking about her friend, Rose Marie. That's from The Hidden World of Girls, the new NPR series from the Kitchen Sisters. And you said that, Davey, that came from a listener. I loved her sort of, you know, conspiratorial almost tone in her voice. Like, she's not really, hasn't really left that role, you know?
That's for sure. And Pat Cadigan has led us into this whole world of women and science fiction. And we just found the noted Marlene Barr, who apparently is the high priestess of feminist science fiction criticism, who kind of talks like this, you know. And so we're looking forward to adding a little element of that interview with Marlene Barr telling you stories of women in science.
And that music there,
that's from The Day the Earth Stood Still. So, and it's a fantastic soundtrack. And at one point, we decided we were going to put that under every story in the series.
All right. Well, let's bring our listeners in here. Karen is calling from San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Go ahead.
I grew up in Southern California and came of age in the 70s. And believe it or not, the Girl Scouts made a huge impact on my life. There was a group of us that started together in elementary school, and we stayed in Girl Scouts despite the fact that most other girls dropped out. But we stayed, and we were really empowered by our leader because she was an emergency room nurse, and she would sleep during our meetings, and so we had to sort of step up to the plate and do everything. And we traveled, and we went river rafting, and we snuck into Boy Scout camps, and we planned gymborees for other scouts. And it just had a huge impact on my life, and I don't think I would be the person I am today if I wasn't in the Girl Scouts. And I have a doctorate, and I'm a consultant, and I live in San Francisco. But the principles that the Girl Scouts instilled in me really left a huge impression.
Mm. Are you still friends with some of the girls you met?
You know, via the internet, I've actually been able to reunite. And the troop that we had that stayed together until basically we were in high school has formed a group on Facebook. And so we've all kind of touched base, and everybody's all over the country and has different lives. And it's been fun to touch base over the years and find out what everybody was doing. But those were really special times.
What happened when you snuck into the Boy Scout camp?
Well, we actually camped at a Boy Scout camp in Long Beach, California, and it was the San Pedro area, because we were doing the same things that we were doing. We were Mariner Scouts, and so we were sailing and canoeing and learning how to tie knots and build fires. And, you know, there was just no difference. We weren't treated any different than the Boy Scouts.
Have you had any contact with the Girl Scouts since? Do you see what they're doing now, or do you know any young girls that are in the Scouts?
I do. I actually have two boys, and I sing to them the Girl Scout songs that I learned every night before they go to bed. They go to bed with tap. But I have a lot of girls in my neighborhood, and they all know how I feel about the Girl Scouts. And I was asked to visit a meeting one time, and they know that they can call me to buy cookies.
You got a singer here, Davia.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Karen, I'm right with you. I was a Girl Scout, too, back in my time in Southern California, and had a really similar experience. It led me into the wilderness. I was completely about camping because of the Girl Scouts, and hiking in mountains and rivers and water, and also cooking. I didn't grow up in a family that cooked, and it was the Girl Scouts where I learned cooking as well, which I love. So, mm-hmm. Okay, hit it on the Girl Scout song, Karen. Let's
can you sing
give,
us a
give
little
us
bit?
One line.
A day is done, gone the sun. That's what I sing to my boys every night. And I can't believe I had boys. I was with girls.
Are they Boy Scouts?
Not yet, but they're interested.
Yeah. Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts are very different, aren't they, as organizations?
Very different, right. And the boys really take their dads. They don't really take their moms.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Oh, I'm sorry. I cut her off by mistake there at the end. Nikki, have you heard from any Girl Scouts so far?
Well, I've been looking at a lot of Girl Scouts and talking to them at the grocery store selling cookies. And that's kind of why I was asking the question about, you know, Girl Scouting now. And I'd love to kind of look into that further, because when I asked the girls, well, what do you guys do? You know, where are you going? And what trips are you doing? And it was mostly to the movies and the mall.
Mm.
And I said, well, do you do any hiking? No, they hadn't. And I don't know, maybe this was this one troop that I was talking
urban
to.
Troop.
An urban troop. But so I'd really love to hear more about what's going on in scouting today.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Christy is calling from Daly City. Hi there.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just reflecting on inspirational women in my life. And my grandmother immediately came to mind. We're Filipino, so Filipino culture is very traditional. Like, to this day, they don't have divorce or abortion or anything like that. And I think for especially her generation, she came from a family of 10 siblings, and she actually practiced family planning, had four kids, 4 years apart, pre-World War II, and she had to drop out of second grade to raise her brothers and sisters. So I think that probably gave her the idea of practicing family planning.
Hmm. What did she teach and you?
She taught me self-reliance.
Independence.
Yeah, and I think you can, you know, take a bad situation and make it better just out of, you know, the way you approach it and what you do with what you have.
Yeah. Is your grandmother still alive?
No, she died about 5 or 6 years ago.
But fond memories. She,
even with that second grade education that she had, she actually became a millionaire in the Philippines, slowly buying up property, owning a furniture store, and just, you know, putting all her kids through college.
Wow.
And, you know, she really accomplished a lot.
We call that burying the lead in journalism. That's a great story.
What's your grandmother's name?
Araceli Icaciano de la Rosa.
Say that again.
Or De La Rosa Icaciano, I should say. De La Rosa was her maiden name.
Say her full name again.
Araceli de la Rosa Icaciano.
Do you want to, should we keep her on hold and maybe, do you want to be able to get back to her about?
Yeah, we would love to know more about your grandmother's story. Absolutely. Thank you for calling.
Right.
What did your, do you remember your grandmother singing any lullabies?
You know, she actually raised me till the age of 4 because my mother had to leave me there when I was 3 months old to come to the United States. She's a doctor. And so actually my considered my grandmother my mother. I thought she was my mother until I came to the States. But I don't remember her singing.
Who had time to sing when she was raising all those people? great. Well, yeah, we'd love to talk with you
more. Yeah, well, Christy, if you don't mind, stay on hold for a second. We'll get your contact information if that's all right with you.
Oh, sure. No problem.
All right. Thanks so much.
We've found that grandmothers are rich ground
for stories. Sure. What about your own moms and grandmothers? Nikki, what did you get from them?
Well, my Portuguese grandmother came from Madeira when she was 13, and she was married by the time she was 13 and a half to a man that she'd never met, had 5 kids by the time she was 20, and it was on the East Coast, and then came to the West Coast, and her husband, who was much older than she was, it was arranged marriage, was pretty brutal, and she wound up leaving him with 5 little kids, and I really related to the last call, Christy's call, because my grandmother never read, or she couldn't read or write English or Portuguese, but she was great with numbers, and she really did know how to sort of make things work financially. And she worked at Mother's Cookies in Oakland and raised these 5 kids, and wound up marrying a wonderful immigrant Greek guy who was a lawyer who took on these kids and created a real family. She was definitely the matriarch.
Yeah. So, Davia, what about you?
My grandmother on my mother's side was a Russian Jewish immigrant, and she married my grandfather, who was a bookie. And somewhere along the way, she decided that being married to a Russian immigrant bookie was just not what the promise of America was. She left my grandfather, she divorced, and she changed her identity from being a Russian Jew to a Finnish Christian Scientist. Yes, I know. A Finnish Christian Scientist, and looked for a bank president, which she married, and assumed a new identity.
Wow.
Which is, when I think back on it, and then my mother was an only child, and so there was not many places to get the family story. So sometimes I think, you know, trying to find that story is part of why the Kitchen Sisters are.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Susan is calling from San Ramon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, what's on your mind this morning?
Hi. In the early 90s, I made a trip to Juvenile Hall in Contra Costa County to drop off some Christmas gifts, and asked one of the staff just in passing if they had a library. I love to read. And they said, oh, we have this wonderful woman, Betty Franzen. You should call her. And I did, and found out she had started this amazing program at Juvenile Hall. You go in at 10 o'clock at night, and you read bedtime stories to the kids there. And that program started in, I think, June of 1991, and it's still going strong. And I've been volunteering with them almost the whole time. But she was a comfortable, middle-class lady with a nice life. Her sons were grown, and she goes out at night, you know.
She reads at night.
She's still doing it?
You know, she has a problem with breathing, so now she mentors us, but she's still very much involved.
What kinds of things do they read to them?
You know, it's up to the reader's discretion. Our one rule is we stay away from melancholy. We read everything from Green Eggs and Ham to Harry Potter and Percy Jackson and Du Freak. It depends on the group of kids.
And these kids are teenagers?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, usually the average age is 15, but yeah, teenagers. Mostly only one unit of girls.
Nikki?
How do they respond when you read? I mean, what's that look like? Where are you and how are you reading to them?
It's amazing. It's a little more in the new facility. In the old facility, you sat in a cafeteria, and you read over a speaker, and all they heard was voice. And they're in cells, but they're enclosed, like one or two kids to a little room. and your voice comes in over a loudspeaker. So it's a little mysterious, kind of exotic, and they love it. They actually documented, you know, the requests for aspirin or headaches and things at night had gone way down.
Susan, you know what? I apologize, but the cell phone connection is a little difficult, so we're going to let you go. But thank you so much for sharing that. Sorry, if you could hold on. Yeah, we're going to get we'll get your contact information. Thanks so much.
That's a remarkable story. I mean, I think it's that level of ritual and tradition and the significance of that and the importance of that. And as things fall away in the culture, you know, even hearkening back to Sophia and her ritual box, to see the creativity to, you know, find these rituals right now and reading, certainly. What a beautiful story that was.
Let's go to Santa Rosa now. Ava is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, go right ahead. You're on with the Kitchen Sisters.
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm Eva, and I was one of the first women firefighters here in Santa Rosa. And I'm actually the first woman firefighter to make it to a service retirement age, which is just kind of a pioneering experience.
What year did you join?
I started in the fire service in 1986.
And what kind of reaction did you get? What kind of reception?
Well, in the beginning, I started as a public education specialist, so that was fine for everybody because that's kind of women's work in the fire department. That's where you go to schools and talk to kids about fire safety and things like that. But once I decided that I wanted to be a firefighter, it was rather challenging, I would say.
What happened?
Challenging on at first on a physical, you know, it's very physically demanding. So I got to the point where I was able to prove to them that I could do it physically. I kind of got challenged mentally, so they kind of push you to your emotional, you know, breaking point.
How did they do that?
And so, but I kind of got through that, and now it's time for me to retire, and I feel like I've come a long way.
Yeah. How did they push you to your mental breaking point? What did they do?
Oh, they just, you know, it's just one of those things that's kind of the way that they get you to quit, that they just kind of push you to the point of breaking and then say, see, you can't do it. Even though you could do it physically, maybe emotionally and mentally, you have a hard time with it. So I finally got to the point where I kind of pushed back a little bit and said, no, you're not going to take this from me. This is my job. This is my livelihood. This is my whole life, and you're not going to make me quit.
Mm. A lot of women pioneers in fire departments and police departments across the country.
Hats off to you, Ava.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your retirement. You've earned it, sounds like.
Thank you very much.
All right.
I'm very excited because now I'm helping new firefighters, both men and women, and the physical agility portion of the fire academy. So, giving back.
I wonder also, we have a Hidden World of Girls storyline with National Public Radio. Fits all right, Scott. I'll
sure,
give out that number.
Please.
And if you would tell your story one more time to our message line, because we're building this archive of women's stories.
You want it on a landline, by the way? Or doesn't that matter?
That would be great,
because
it's a clearer message.
Yeah, if you can call from a landline, but if you're going to forget it and you're in the spirit right now, however you do it, 202-408-9576, 202-408-9576, and we'll record your story, too.
All right, great. Thanks again, and we appreciate your sharing the story with us. Let's go now to Cupertino, and Jennifer is calling. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to remember a special teacher that I had. I was always interested in writing poetry when I was a little girl. And in fifth grade, I had a teacher named Miss Kava. And she encouraged us to write poems in class. And one of my poems she particularly liked, and so she submitted it to the Palo Alto Times. In the 60s and 70s, the Palo Alto had a daily newspaper, and I don't know if they had a column just for students or for communities, but they published my little poem in the Palo Alto Times when I was in fifth grade, which was a big deal for me. But the other thing that she did was she asked me to write the poem on a little piece of paper, and she had one of those rings that, I guess it's like a poison ring, you open the top and you can keep stuff inside.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept a copy of my poem in her ring. And I remember thinking at the time that this was a very magical, powerful kind of thing that you could do with words. I've written poems my whole life now. And in addition to my regular day job, I also work with the California Poets in the Schools.
Well,
so now I go into elementary schools and help kids write poetry.
Go ahead.
Do you have a poison ring?
I don't have a poison ring.
Did you ever get back in touch with that teacher and let her know what kind of an impact she had on you?
You know, I didn't. I don't know if she still goes. I never knew. I don't remember her first name, and I never could find her again. But she's clearly one of the iconic women from my childhood.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for calling.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thank you. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. Maybe we can hear another quick excerpt, or should we go to more calls? What do you think, Dave? I'm letting you take over here.
Oh, God, to produce. Let's do one more call
and then
hear another
All right.
excerpt.
Good. Let's go to Berkeley now. Connie's on the line.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Is this Connie?
Yes, hi there. So I'm an interpreter, and I do a lot of cases in family law, kids' divorce, and domestic violence. I also do a little interpreting pro bono for people applying for political asylum because of domestic violence. And obviously, a lot of these women are low-income, very limited English speakers, and I find so much strength from them because most of them are coming from a Latin American country. They don't have a lot of education. They are raised in a culture where women should be submissive to men, which is the way I was raised, the way my mother was raised. And to see them find the strength within them to be able to say no more to a bad situation and to get out and to run away, I find so empowering because they're finally able to say no more. And I wish my mother would have been able to do that when she was in that situation. So I just want to, sometimes you don't have to be bricks. You just have to know that there's help out there to get you out, to help you get out of a bad situation. And these women usually say just no more, and they find that strength within them. And I just find that so empowering for women.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. So you say you're a translator. What language do you translate?
I'm an interpreter.
Interpreter.
Okay, different from a translator. I'm Spanish.
I see. What's the difference?
Well, and a translator works with the written word. So you take a book, let's say, and you translate that into another language. Interpreters, we translate spoken language. So right on the spot, you're interpreting from one language to the next.
All right. Well, thanks, Connie, for calling. We appreciate it.
Okay, and thank you. This is a great show. It's very inspiring.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's read an email here from Carol, who writes, thank you, sisters, for your work capturing these incredible stories. I, too, went off to collect women's stories around the kitchen table, and I stumbled upon a cache of stories in both Italy and France of how women struggled through serving their families during World War II. I moved from collecting the simple traditional recipes to writing about the women and their determination to help their families survive during wartime. Even now, three generations after the war, family members continue to grab onto their families with even more fervor and hold tightly to the traditions and foods that bind them together. And she's collected those in a book. And also this from Kathy in San Rafael. I think women with engineering, math, and science backgrounds are not highlighted enough, especially those who entered the field in the 70s when women were not very welcome in this male-dominated field. The American Association of University Women has recently released a study talking about how women are struggling to stay in these fields. And those are, I imagine, the kinds of stories that are of interest to you, Davia.
Yeah, we have been saying we're looking for 10 women with scientific secrets. So absolutely, that's right up our alley. The other story that triggers the World War II story, someone just called into the Hidden World of Girls line and told us about their mother, who was a English war bride. She married an American GI over in England, but they weren't allowed to come over originally. It was forbidden that these European war brides come over to America after the war. And then in 1946, the Cunard line, the Queen Mary, they designated one crossing for all these European, English, mainly war brides. So thousands and thousands of women all on this boat, most of them with very little money, the shirt on their back, a few things. They come over across the ocean. They come, past the Statue of Liberty. They get into the harbor. And it's this just big, basically, photo op that's been arranged. And all these soldiers are there waiting for them. And one by one, these thousands of women are called down the gangplank. They walk to meet the man. There's this big public embrace, but they said hundreds and hundreds of them came and the men never showed up. And these women were just there, stranded. Anyway, it's that story.
Wow. Well, thank you both so much for the work you do, not just on this series, but everything you've done. And let's give out the number again, the NPR number. It's 202-408-9576 to leave your story for the Hidden World of Girls. Davia Nelson, Nikki Silva, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, Kevin Guillory, and Christina Russo. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer. Dave Iverson is here tomorrow, and Michael Krasny will be back on Monday. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.